Ladies and gentlemen, I have none other than the guru, the mystic, the author of Life on Your Terms, Rex Sykes. I got to tell you a quick story. I have learned about Rex many, many years ago before the interwebs was full of Facebooks and Twitters. There was a thing called news groups. And I was a budding learning guy who wanted to find out about this hypnotic secret sauce kind of way of selling and influencing and all this stuff. And we're probably going back to the not late 90s, right?
Probably.
And that was these groups were the Facebooks, the Twitters, the MySpaces, right? But it was like reading email. And one of the guys that I latched onto and wanted to read was Rex Sykes. And eventually we had browsers and we had websites, and people built websites for their companies. And I bought some cassette tapes, right? And I bought these cassette tapes and I got a bunch some. Some of them, they were from goal setting to different things, talks that he had done. And one of them that I bought eventually, I think it came out later, was something called Attitude Activator, which is a hypnotic trip through this all this stuff that kind of surprised me because you don't have the you are getting sleepy. It's none of that. And it was the first really hypnotic thing that I'd ever bought or listened to. And this is a segue, by the way, to his book. And one of the things that really hit me across the head was a piece in there it says adversity is a unique and unprecedented opportunity to learn and have fun. Wisdom to live by. And with that, I want to introduce you to Rex Sykes.
Jim, it is good to see you and great to be with you again. Wow.
Thank you.
And I should say it's great to see you too, but it's
It's phenomenal. I at Zoom, the last time we did this, it was over the phone.
that's right.
So we've really have stepped up here. So I took that off of that cassette, and I got to tell you, as someone who taught me that as a belief system, it really changed the way I coached football. Okay. I had football and I was successful with it, but I thought about it. I'm like, what am I teaching young kids? Because I was the polarization guy. It's us against the world. Well, what the hell am I teaching to a little munchkin, right? With a young little impressionable brain. It's a lot better that, looking at, I finally came to the realization, the whole point of the damn game is adversity. That's why we're going there. It's forever. So why am I surprised when the ref makes a bad call? Why am I surprised when Johnny drops the ball? Why? It's called humanity, and we're trying to get better. So everything is a chance to get better. So I'm gonna say that's really what your book is about, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But that is a great analogy that you make. Football is really a metaphor or an analogy to life, and life is a game. I mean, so we say. So adversity is part of it, and trying to move forward while seemingly being prevented, and having to navigate around obstacles or problems or challenges or hardships to get to the other side, or develop contingency plans so that whatever is thrown your way or comes your way, you're able to sidestep or move around and still get to your goal. So wow, I mean, it is one of those things that, mindset truly, truly matters both in life and in football and in coaching and in sports. There are inspirational speakers. I prefer that term to motivational speaker because I believe all motivation starts within. I posted a meme today that says, people think that motivation comes like you run away from the bear because the bear motivates you. You don't. You run away from the bear because you're desiring safety. You don't want to be eaten by a bear, and you move towards the reward or to the carrot because you desire the benefits or the rewards, not because the carrot is anything different. It's like people want a car, not because they want the car, but because how they feel about having the car or the home or the trophy or whatever it might be. So attitude is truly, you know, everything. In fact, research tells us that attitude is the number one predictor for success in all areas of your life. Hence, it's why I developed the attitude activator that you mentioned, and why I wrote my book, and why you coach, because, you know, a coach goes into the locker room at halftime or whatever and says, "Hey, team, you know, let's get it together." They work on X activating the team members' attitude, both as individuals and as a team, to work together and cooperate and to collaborate so that they can accomplish what they set out to do, which is hopefully win the game or at least play the very best that they can. And so that inspiration, that motivation, that attitude is so very important to, you know, we see it in sports, we see it in you know, in actors and musicians and everything else, but it's really truly important in everyday life. And going back to the other thing you said about the attitude activator being hypnotic or hypnosis, all communication or all hypnosis is communication, and all communication essentially is hypnosis. It's not about the "you are getting sleepy, sleepy, watch the watch" stuff, which is an aspect of some of it, but that need not be. You know, whenever you tell somebody, you know, "Hey, I had this incredible meal at this restaurant," and they're imagining what that would be like, that they can almost taste it, they feel like, "Wow, I got to go there." That's a form of hypnosis, because you're influencing them without intending to influence them. You're just sharing a story. On the other hand, you could intend to influence them, because people do that all the time. They go, "You got to try this restaurant," or "You have to go see this movie," or "You must read this book." Yeah, and you must, by the way, read this book. You must. And get the attitude activator. But you know, that we influence people in that way, you know, by what we're excited by, and the changes that we go through. We want to share them with other people so that they too can benefit, because we love them or we like them, you know, or it's important that we work together because they're co-workers or colleagues or something. So yeah.
So I want to put out there, I want you to flex, but I'm going to flex your skills, but I want to kind of open it with this. The first time that I had met you in person with my daughter, we went to a small talk. It was just a couple hours, I think, at LAX over at the Embassy Suites, if I recall. And at the end, the gentleman running the show with you, Jonathan Alfeld, a friend, mutual friend, I didn't know this was possible. And you talked, I think, if I recall, about learning, but you really weren't talking about learning. You were talking about, according to Jonathan, he goes, "I counted seven levels of communication that Rex was doing." And I looked at him like, "What?" And that's ninja stuff, people. I mean, for someone to be able to talk at those levels, it requires skill. And that's you. So how did you get to this point where I'm going to write a book, Life on My Terms, Your Terms? How do you get to this place? Because you've been in the game a long time. As I said, I was reading your stuff late 90s is when I discovered you, but that you started way before
Oh,
that.
yeah, a few decades before that. Yeah.
So tell
Well,
us the quick story.
I mean, it's like anything. If you want to get good at sports, if you want to be good, you invest your time, your energy, you know, and your money and your effort to get good, because it's something that's important to you. I wanted to get to be the best at what I could do in terms of communicating. As a kid, I was an actor. I wanted to be a mystic, so I've been reading Napoleon Hill and Claude Bristol and Robert Collier and Elsie Benedict. I mean, all these people since I was a kid, but I didn't really apply much of it until I was in my 20s, you know, when I had the first of many crises in my life. But at that time in my 20s, you know, I nearly died. I mean, all sorts of things happened. I lost everything. And I realized that the path I was on was not the path that I wanted to be on, and that I needed to do something profound, something desperate, something, you know, that would steer me straight. So I locked myself in my apartment for between 6 and 8 weeks so that I could visualize, I could meditate, I could affirm, I could do whatever I could do in order to get myself back on track. And yes, I went out and got food, and yes, I did pee. But I mean, from morning to late night, I sat in my easy chair and just worked on myself for day in and day out. And the first couple of weeks, I was like, "Why did this happen to me? Why am I so stupid? How could I not see this? What on earth? You know, I'm such a schmuck. I'm never going to have any life or my friends. I've lost everything." And about halfway through the time I was there, I had this epiphany. I'm like, I don't care about any of this stuff. That's not what's important. Why I'm broke doesn't matter. What I need to know is how to get back on track. So a question like, how long is this going to take? I replaced with, how soon can I find myself getting better and better? You know, Emile Coué said, you know, every day and every way I'm getting better and better. So I found variations of that to begin to say, how soon, how quickly, in how many different ways can I find myself feeling good? You know, if I were to think about myself, how many positive thoughts could I have in a day? How much more can I smile? If I'm going to feel great, where in my body will I feel the very best? Will it be in my feet first, or my head first, or my heart first? Will it be in my backbone? What is it about, you know, me that is really wonderful and incredible? And I changed the direction of my thinking from I'm broken and I suck and nothing works out to, wow, there's possibilities and there's opportunities and there's resources and I can find them. And if I don't know them, I can learn to do them. And by 6 to 8 weeks, I finally emerged. Now, I didn't emerge, you know, like King Kong coming out and destroying everything. I emerged more like a toddler having learned to walk. I would stumble and I would fall. But what during that process, what I discovered was the very thing that got me out of the house was the thing that kept me going. Because once you create some momentum, that momentum can pick up. It's like, you know, if your car stops on a flat surface and you run out of gas, you can put it in neutral and you can push your car. And it might take a little bit of effort to push it the first time, but after once it gets going, you can pretty much just push it with your hand. It because the you know the mass and the gravity and the you know everything takes care of itself. Momentum takes care of itself. So, you know, the idea of changing and investing in yourself and getting a return on investment is to invest, be passionate, get clear about what you want, dedicate yourself, commit yourself to making those changes. If you want to be the best football player, if you want to be the best swimmer, if you want to be the best baker or sewer or piano player or actor or speaker or financier, you have to invest in yourself. And the thing that all sports trains us, teaches us is you practice, you rehearse, and you drill and you do the basics and you drill and you learn to master the basics and you put them together. But because you love to play the game is why you're there. If a parent forces somebody to play football or basketball or baseball or swim or whatever, it doesn't work nearly as much as if the person wants to do it themselves. But if they really want to do it, all you really have to do to get good is to want to play the game and then play the game. So the way that we build skill is to correctly practice repeatedly, which is spaced repetition. So you practice on Monday, maybe Tuesday or Monday and Wednesday, but or you know whatever, but you practice through spaced repetition consistently, repeatedly, correctly for long enough until those skills, those talents, those abilities become a habit. And that's true whether it's your thinking, like I did, where I had to change my thinking from it sucks to this is marvelous. You know, I always say it's dog crap or diamonds. It's your choice. And sadly, most people choose dog crap and they wallow in it because they don't realize they have the choice to do differently. Instead of looking within and going, what are the resources that I have or the opportunities and possibilities available to me within me so that I can look out at the world and find those resources and opportunities and possibilities that are available so that I can move forward and do what I want. If they don't start within, but they put all their attention on the without, then as soon as it gets hard, that they whine and they complain and they blame and they accuse and they wallow and they back off. But if you train yourself like an athlete would train themselves or an actor, they rehearse 6 weeks or so in a play for opening night. They rehearse the lines, they rehearse where they hit the spotlights, where they have to move into the light and the marks on the stage, so that on opening night and the subsequent nights of the play, it looks like the very first time they've ever done it. You know, you don't want it to look like it's rehearsed. You want it to look like it's occurring in real time. So they practice it to make it look natural and to know the lines and to do what they need to do. And that's what most people don't do in everyday life. What they do in real everyday life is they practice and reinforce negativity, being defeated. You know, things don't work out. Circumstances triumph over the person instead of the person is able to triumph over the circumstances. And they live a life of having one foot on the dock and one foot on the boat and
Well,
not.
let me ask you something. And by the way, guys, you still act, right?
Oh,
To this day. I mean, you talk about a skill stack. I mean, we could talk for 2 hours just on your resume, right? The question I have, you're in that pit of crisis that you were talking about, where you hold up in the apartment and so forth. What gets you to even get to that next step? Because at first, like you said, it's negative, negative, negative. Why me, God? You know, all this stuff. And some people never come out of
Well,
that,
you
right?
know, our hardships are our blessings, and most people don't understand it. Most of us stay in a comfort zone, whether it's painful or not, and we just stay there. I mean, some people are really tolerant of suffering, and they suffer, and they go, "You don't know how I've suffered. I've suffered for 45 years or 50 years or all my life." But,
Yeah.
you know, at some point, you either go, "No, I'm done," or you continue. For me, what happened was, you know, and I write about it in my book, and I don't talk a lot about me in my book, but there is a small chapter about my story. And then there's stories of other people who are victors and accomplishers and people who have done things and things that I've interacted with and all sorts of other stuff in the book. But I had been misprescribed medication from a doctor after having been injured, you know, skydiving. And it was a fatal combination pill, should have killed me, or at least put me in a coma. And it didn't. But what it did, as long as I took the drug and other drugs that then became available as a result of abusing medication. I took the medication as prescribed, but it then led to other abuses because of what it was doing to me. So ultimately, I ended up jumping out of a window. It was a two-story window and landed on my head, you know, without breaking my fall. I just landed straight on the top of my head and fell over on grass. I mean, it wasn't concrete. And I was like, crap, I can't even kill myself. I mean, I was so mad. I was so angry that I kept failing at everything. I failed at killing myself. And I ran upstairs to do it again, and I had locked myself out. And now I'm really mad. I mean, I'm
Yeah.
not only cannot do it, but now I can't get in to complete the job. Well, my parents happened to be visiting me, and so they locked me. They took the distributor car off my car, and they watched me while trying to decide what psychiatric institute to assign me to, you know, to get help.
Yes.
And they didn't. But ultimately I went to therapy and different therapies and everything else, and nothing seemed to work. And I started to drink very heavily. I felt so much shame and so much remorse and so agitated over what I had gone through that now I started to abuse alcohol. I mean, and severely abuse alcohol. And I was drunk all the time. And I got in all sorts of not legal trouble, but got in trouble with different people and friends still who had left me before, others were fleeing from me now. And then one day I was at a club, and I this guy came up to me and started reading me the Riot Act, and I didn't know who he was or anything. I was like, "Who are you?" He's like, "I was here last night. You were pushing me around." I'm like, "Oh no, that's not me. I don't do that kind of thing." "Oh no, you were doing it." Blah. So he called over the maitre d' and said, "You know, Benson, kick this guy out. He's an asshole, or I'll kill him kind of." And Benson said, "Look, you know, Rex is a good guy, and you're a good guy, Nikki, and blah blah blah, and shake hands." And he kind of very reluctantly, I said, "Look, I'm sorry. I was drunk. I have no. I promise, never happen again." And we shook hands, and I went downstairs to where the waiter, it was El Privado. It was the hot spot in Los Angeles on Sunset. And I went downstairs and asked my waiter friend John. I said, "Who is Nikki?" And he just went completely white. I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Oh man." He said, "Why do you want to know?" I said, "Well, he just told me I was pushing him around, and he was like really mad at me." He goes, "Oh, you are gonna die." He says, "He's gonna kill you. He's one of the big mafia guys in town, and I mean,
Oh.
he is totally vicious." And I left, and he said, "You're gonna die. If he's gonna kill you," he said, "you drove your car almost off of a cliff. You passed out all over town. You're left out in the night, you know, and blah blah blah. You're gonna die." And I left him, and I went home. And I went, I don't want to die. I mean, I really didn't want to die. As much as I had wanted to die, I
Yeah.
didn't at this moment want to die. And I thought, I got to do something different. And that's when I locked myself in that apartment. So sometimes, you know, they say you have to bottom out, but you have to get to the point where you go, "No more, no more. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm done with that. I have to do something different." And that's what hardship and problems and difficulty and obstacles do for us. You know, it's kind of like weightlifting. You know, there's that the you can lift heavier and heavier weights because you build up the strength by lifting the weight. That resistance develops the muscle. So life offers us resistance so that we can break through to the other side. But we have been conditioned in growing up to think, well, this is unwanted and unwarranted, and damn it, you know, I hate this, and it's not fair. And we look at it at the problems instead of, I'm the solution to my circumstances. And if I don't know how, I'll find somebody else to help me, you know, through it or whatever. But instead of looking at the circumstances and feeling defeated, you have to start looking within to what you can do to make the change. And I didn't know at first. That's why I locked myself in the apartment. Said, I got to figure this out. But I had meditated as a child, not really successfully or deeply or anything. I had been involved with hypnosis since I was 11, so and I taught it. You know, I knew affirmations. I had read all the books on personal development. So now I was around 25. I'm going, I have to apply this, or yeah, I probably will die. And so it became important enough for me to make that change. Now, hopefully, not everybody has to go through that, but many do. You know, it does seem to be the story for a whole lot of people. They encounter some difficulty in their life, and they are at loss, and then at some point they go, okay, I got it. Well, and I'll sum it up by this. You know, a lot of people have goals too. And why should you listen to me? Okay, because I've been there. I've done every bonehead, stupid thing in the world, and I'll tell it to you exactly straight. I'll give it to you honestly and clearly and plainly as I possibly can. And one of the things is this, is that the thought leaders, the inspirers, the motivational speakers out there are preying upon people with the wrong information. They go, if you want to be happy, you have to work really hard. You have to sacrifice. You have to struggle. You have to, you know, escape from everything that would distract you. Focus on that so that you can have the car, the house, the trophy spouse, you know, the vacation, the land, the money, the fame, the success, and everything, so that you can be someone important. So it's, if you want it, you have to work really, really, really hard to get it. Then once you have it, you'll be important. And it's truly the other way around. You, who you are determines what you do, which will determine what you get. So the first order of business is to develop your attitude, develop who you are, to become the kind of person for who transformation and change is easy and desirable, and that you can do it delightfully without all the struggle, without all the hardship, because you don't have to. That was the breakthrough that I had back in that room. Is that I discovered that ultimately, what I've been teaching now for well over 40 years is that you can learn with delight and with fun and with ease and more readily. In fact, you can learn better if you play and have fun than if you struggle and sacrifice and flagellate yourself, because stress and stress hormones only make us want to flee, like adrenaline makes us want to run away or fight. It's not good for learning, you know. So I discovered this, that, you know, there's the goal and there's the destination that people have that they want to get to, or they have their life purpose that they want to get to. Well, when I was a kid, I used to lie down in the back seat of the car when my parents would travel cross country to visit relatives, and I go, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there? Like most kids, right? I mean, it's a common universal experience. And I didn't appreciate the journey. I was good once I got there. I was good at home, but the journey I hated. I just hated traveling. Even when I early in my career, having to fly around, I hated being in airports and on planes and taking the cars. I mean, being there was fine. But what I realized is that I could have, at 25, have been killed and never gotten anywhere else or anywhere along the line. I mean, tomorrow, who knows? It's not guaranteed, right? So you may or may not ever make that destination. You may or may not ever have the mansion. You may or may not ever be famous. You may or may not ever be happy. You may or may not have a trophy, whatever it might be, right? So the only thing that you do have is the journey. So if you journey well and journey along the way and are happy and delighted and thrilled and you're thriving and living and having a wonderful time, then if you make the destination, fantastic. And if you don't, you still had a marvelous time. You just didn't get to the goal. You know, so you did your best, you lived your best, you had your best times, you enjoyed all of it, you overcame the struggles and everything else. And, you know, sadly, you checked out before it happened, or you changed your mind before you got there and you decided to do something else. But the ride was a thrill. And that's why people, when they have one foot on the boat and one foot on the dock, they have to, like, if they want to get to their destination, they either have to jump into the boat and go there, or they have to jump off the boat and go the other way. So it's up, but you have to decide. So dog crap, Simon, which will you choose?
I getting back to that attitude activator and how it changed my coaching. One of the things that it got me to focus on with the kids is that I focus on small wins. small wins. Everything is focus on the small wins, and that'll give us the big wins. So every play is the most important one. What's the most important one? This one, right? So, and so I, getting into the mindset of knowing that I'm going to be talking with you a little while ago, as I'm out on my walk, and there's this little parkette on the way, and it goes, and it has like this curb. There's no sidewalk. It's just a curb, and it goes the entire length. And me being a kid at heart, I'm like, okay, let's walk this thing, right, all the way to the end. And whenever I've done it where I'm staring out at the end, I end up always going off balance and falling, because you got to really focus on each step when you're doing that thing, because you're not going to make it. So, and because I remember as a kid, I would do this kind of stuff and eventually get to the point where I could run the whole thing and not even look where I'm going. But I'm 60. I'm not a kid, and I'm starting over in a sense on these kind of little tricks. So I realize, oh, wow, if I just focus on each step all the way down, eventually I get there. I don't know if that's an analogy you can appreciate, but.
No, absolutely. One of my favorite quotes is drop by drop, the tub fills, you know, and so yeah. If a leaky sink, it'll fill up if you plug it up eventually, you know, it just may not as fast as if you turn the hose on or the spigot on, but you eat an elephant bite by bite. And what they encourage runners and bikers to do, or hikers to do, especially when they're going uphill, is to look at the steps they're taking, not at the pinnacle of the mountaintop. Because if you look at your steps, you're doing one step after the other, you can keep going. But if you look at the mountaintop, what happens to people is psychologically they go, oh, God, I'll never make that. That's too far. You know. And one of the first things that happens when we're physically challenged is that the brain gives out, because we're not conditioned to go, oh, well, this is normal. I can exert myself. I did, and I don't encourage anyone to do this. I do not. I mean, this is not what I would consider healthy. But in the early 80s, 70s and 80s, we did we called it a mandala meditation. I didn't name it, but at any rate, it was running in place, raising your knees as high as possible. People think a meditation is only sitting. But anyway, you'd run as fast as you could, raising your knees up to your chest as much as you possibly could. And you did it with a partner. And the partner's job was to scream at you and go, keep going, don't stop, keep going, whenever you felt like quitting. So, you know, you start running, and after 20, 30 seconds of running, you go, oh, God, I can't do this. The brain goes, I can't do that, I'm going to die. It goes, keep running. And so as you start to whiff, keep going. So you go, oh, scream, yell harder. So we would scream and yell, oh, and run. And you do it. And the goal was to do 15 minutes of this and then stop. not no cool down, any of that. That's why I say I don't know if it's that healthy. But then stop and watch what happened to that energy released in your body, because it would had to go somewhere. It had to express itself. And so you would stop and kind of freeze, and then you would allow it to kind of move through your body after a certain period of time, where you kind of dance, like move it off, let it go through you, and then you would lie down and kind of go away in meditation. So it was a way of using the energy. But the thing I discovered was, I didn't think I could do it. I thought I was going to die, and I would scream and run harder. I could do it. And I managed to do it, you know, not necessarily the first time, but after a while I could do it. And you conditioned yourself to do it. But you don't believe you can do it, you know, or if you believe you can do it, at some point you disbelieve that you're going to do it. So, but that screaming and yelling, going, I can do this, I'm going to do that. Now, attitude doesn't have to be that. Attitude is many things. It can be curiosity, fascination, light and fun and play and serenity. I mean, you want the attitude of being relaxed and calm when you're going to sleep, and you want the attitude of I can do anything when you need to put it into practice, or the attitude of curiosity when you want to learn things, you know, to know that I can learn to do anything even if I don't know how. You know, so it's not. I'm not telling people that they should do that exercise. What I'm telling them the story about is because the first thing to go out is the brain or the mind, which says, I'm never going to make it. I'm never going to do it. Physical exertion, people crap out. Mental exertion, people crap out. Financial exertion, people crap out. Emotional security, you know, I mean, that is because that's how we're conditioned. If the going gets tough, we stop, even though.
Well, that's a great thing you just are saying. It's like when you're running, and all that. And I know this just from being an ex-athlete and coaching kids. We do that on purpose to get their out of their heads, right? And so if you are under huge adversity, why not an opportunity to learn and have fun, as Rex says, right? I mean, oh wow, this is the worst thing ever. I'm going through a divorce, or my girlfriend cheated on me, or whatever. How is this an opportunity to get better? It's the other side of it, right?
Well, and don't give up on yourself. I mean, just because you don't know or see an answer or know how it's going to resolve or you're not satisfied with the way things are going, don't give up on it. Don't stop. Don't blame circumstances and the others and the world and the parties and the religions and everything that could be. Just go, I don't know what to do, but I could learn to do that. Or maybe I need to ask somebody, who could I go ask? What might I do? Because there's always an avenue for you and there's always help out there. And even if you go to the wrong help, it's better than not getting any help, because at least from that point you can go somewhere else. And it's kind of like you can get like all roads lead to Rome. You literally, how many degrees there are around the world, both latitude and longitude. You literally could take every single degree and go around the world and get to Rome. It would take you longer to go certain ways than if you went straight to Rome or straight through the planet to Rome or whatever, but you would eventually get there. It just takes you longer. So there's infinite possibilities and opportunities and resources available to you to change whatever's going on. But to change whatever's going on isn't as important as changing your reaction to it. If you change your mindset and your heart set and the words that you say and the behaviors that you do, you'll get different results. That old, if you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got. And doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result is insanity. So if you understand that you can do this, that you got this, you just have to discover that you've got that and know it. Because awareness, if you don't know that there's a problem, like if you didn't have any nerve endings and you put your hand down on a stove, you'd burn your hand really badly and severely. So you have these pain receptors so that you don't get hurt. We have pain receptors in our emotions, in our body, in our physiology, in our, to understand that when the life that is happening around us and we're participating in it, we're creating it actually. We're actually creating it because it all operate. It all comes through the head. It all comes through your mind, your brain. So we're creating this experience. Create something different, and I give you the steps and the wherewithal, the know-how, and the practices, and the principles, the methods, and the strategies for being able to do that, bit by bit, small step by small step, so that you can do it more comfortably, easily, wonderfully, and delightfully than having to suffer and beat yourself up to do it.
Well, that's awesome. Rex.
So the important thing is it's not just about crises, but if you have crises, know that there are avenues to get through them and to get through them successfully. And for the most part, you don't want to do it alone. I mean, no person is an island, and there's the saying, if you want to do it quick, go alone. Not necessarily true. But if you want to go further, go with other people. So look to people around you who can help lift you up. I mean, don't become a needy vampire, where you suck all the energy out of them, but be certainly be willing to reach out and go, hey, I need some help right now. Be humble enough and honest enough to say, I don't know what to do next. And I mean, that's why I wrote the book, to give you that next step, to give you that one, the peace of mind to know that you can get through anything if you want to. And two, not everything is bad is really bad. What you think about it is, if you consider something to be a problem, it is a problem. If you consider something to be a blessing, it can be a blessing. That very same thing can be seen in multiple ways. Have you ever had an argument with somebody, like a family member, and they remember it one way and you remember it another way? And then there's somebody else jumps in and goes, not both of you are wrong. Well, I mean, you have to realize that our grasp of reality oftentimes is tenuous at best, because it goes through our own filters, our own biases, and our own experiences. And we don't, we, you know, here's the thing about memories. We don't remember things as they actually were. We remember them as we remember them, because otherwise, I mean, you would relive a memory in real time. It would take as long to go through it as you went through it in real life, but you can sit there and go, oh, I remember the time when this happened. And it's all compressed. It's compressed into a memory that, it's what in NLP we call an anchor, kind of, all of the what you saw, hear, felt, tasted, and smelled all in boom, one moment. That memory that might have taken you weeks is a few seconds in your brain time. So it's a representation of what happened, but not necessarily what happened. It's also why in a court of law, or legal scholars, or law enforcement, And everybody understand that witness testimony is the most, eyewitness testimony is the most unreliable form of testimony. People are mistaken all the time. And not unlike the fact that you're in a crowd, you're at a football game or you're somewhere, and you, oh, my friend over there, look, look. And then you look again, oh, nope, sorry. You know, you thought it was somebody, but it's not, you know.
Well, and doesn't a memory change each time you bring it up?
It certainly can to some extent. But here's the good news. You can go back and kind of recode all of your memories to serve you better than they serve you. You can go back and change them so that you're more resourceful, so that you can extract the learning from them and the feelings, because you want to release and let go of the things that hold you back and the things. I always say this: if you caused harm to somebody and you can go back and change it, they're alive and you can change it. You can apologize, say, "I'm so sorry. What can I do to make better?" Do that. But if they passed, or if it's, you know, it's too late, you never see them again, and you can't do that, and you're carrying on guilt or remorse. Guilt is a great thing because hopefully it's there to keep you from making the same mistake or doing bad things. You know, it's having a conscience. You know, if we didn't have one, we might be doing some really nefarious stuff, and some people don't, right? But the point is, it's there. It serves a purpose, and all of our feelings, whether we like them or not, serve a purpose. Remorse, guilt, all that kind of stuff serve a purpose. But so does elation and joy and happiness and everything else. So it you don't need to live with the teeter-totter, like, you know, in the negative, in the deficit, in the bad side. You know, you can either balance it out, or you can get to have positive experiences. Now, how you do that is you go back and you look at your experiences and you release and you let go. I talk about how you do that in the book. You get the attitude activator is a great way to begin to do that. You know, is to release and let go, and to understand that you can recode your experience more positively or in a positive light. And when you begin to see things as a blessing or as an opportunity or as potential, instead of the downside of it, then you're free. You get free of it, so that you can move forward much more rapidly, more successfully, much more easily. And if you're smart, you do it like children do. You know, children learn more as young children by playing and chasing butterflies and being curious, and like just like walking. I mean, so good that there weren't that we can't talk before we walk. I mean, because if we did, we'd go, hey, this is too hard. This sucks. I can't do it. You know, you don't need help. Come on.
No kidding.
But as a kid, you learn to move, you know, and to roll over and eventually to sit up, and all of it's, you know, you can't talk, you can't do anything. And then, but you can cry and, you know, and say, kind of, I'm wet, I'm hungry, I'm, you know, cranky, I'm sleepy, whatever. But, you know, ultimately, walking is the process of you crawl long enough until you can pull yourself up so you can motivate yourself to move forward. And during that process, you stumble a lot. But all of that stumbling and all of that process that you go through is important to go through, or you would never walk. Because it's learning to use the muscle and coordinate the muscle and position yourself in space and learn how to orient yourself and all that. That's what our hardships do for us. Our problems do the very same thing, so that we could learn to live a successful life. But what happens is most people, instead of focusing on this is here as an opportunity for me, is like, oh crap, I don't want that. The bank is foreclosing on my house. I can't make my payment. My ex is causing trouble. My children are doing this, or my boss is doing that. It's, oh, you know, oh my God, my plate is full. You know, I'm going to go eat worms. And really, you know, there are people, I mean, you're in the sports world, there are people who run races around the track. And there are relay races, which are important because it means one person passes the baton to the other person, and another person might actually win the race, but the race wouldn't be won unless the two people work together to coordinate that. So sometimes you travel with other people independently, but still are cooperating in order to get to a successful outcome. But the other kind of races is that people actually put obstacles along the racetrack that they have to hurdle in order to get over. But they still go to run the race, and they enjoy the obstacles. I mean, that is the part of the race. And you know, people climb, rock climb, or they play football because they like the competition, they like the challenge, they like the difficulty. Like, you know, I mean, if somebody just lets you win, you go, oh, what is that? You know, chess masters, for example, these guys who are blindfolded, or women who are blindfolded, play multiple boards with multiple players, you know, all these games. I mean, they don't want the worst player to choose, you know, play against. They want the top players to play against because it challenges them. if you and I develop that attitude that, you know, life is there to help us be our best, not to break us, but to help, even if it's not true. I mean, let's say there's nobody assigning anything. It's just random. But if you adopt the attitude, like Viktor Frankl said, you know, it's man's search for meaning, and Gandhi said, be the change you want to be, see in the world. Gandhi said, you can imprison me, you can beat me, you can take everything from me, but you can't take what's between my ears. You cannot take my imagination from me. And Frankl, who was in the concentration camp, said, you know, all these people had horrible, horrible, horrible experiences, but the ones who survived found meaning in the thing. And not much of that meaning was helping other people or helping, you know, a small animal that got into the camp and feeding it every day. It gave them meaning to stay alive, where the other people, who many of them perished, did so because they didn't have something to keep them
So,
alive.
isn't that the calculation you did when you met the mobster guy, and when you did the switch that made you get out of the apartment and take the baby steps, and eventually, and here we are, how many years later, and you're sharing with us all this knowledge?
And from coming out of my apartment, I decided I got to share this because it so helped me. It so transformed me. It was kind of like, you know, I it was an amazing transformational experience. And so not long after that, I began sharing and teaching and doing programs and workshops, including meditation and all the stuff that I had learned and discovered. But yeah, it was, you know, I was obviously on the wrong path, and I was heading straight down, you know, and doing everything I could possibly do to continue down this kind of the pathway to hell kind of thing. And when my friend said, you know, you're gonna die, and I went, I really, you know. So, but here's something else about that. I to this day go, when I realized that I tried to kill myself and couldn't, and I've had tons of tragedy in my life and tons of accidents, tons of near-death experiences or whatever. But anyway, the point is I realize I am alive. Now, I don't go, you know, somebody up there likes me necessarily. I mean, it could be that, but the point is I go, I'm here. So I must be meant to be here. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's how I live. I'm here and I'll be here till I'm not here.
Right. It's a great take.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, what else is there? I survived all these things, and so have all of the rest of us. So you're meant to be here. You have navigated your way out of every bus, every bad ex thing to be here watching the Zoom or to read the book or to play a football game or to do whatever you're doing. You are successful, and you're successful at surviving. And here's what the brain does. Brain does two things. This primary directive of the brain is keep you alive and keep you surviving. So it looks for danger and it looks for trouble so that you can avoid that. So you're not eaten by a tiger or hit by a bus or murdered by a friend or whatever. It looks for trouble. People call this a negativity bias. It's not negative. It's the most positive thing ever because it's designed to keep you alive. People think, well, it's easier to think negative thoughts. Well, that's just conditioned thoughts. That's just because that's a, you grew up in an environment where that was what you learned. That's your mental habits. There's nothing negative about that. It's a survival bias. But the other thing the brain does is it wants you to thrive. And it does this by using the least amount of energy for survival or for thriving ever. It's called the law of conservation or law of least effort. Because it, you know, once you learn how to open a door, you don't have to learn how to open the door over and over again. Once you learn to drive your car, ride a bike, you don't have to learn how to do it over and over again. Unless you've had some neurological damage or some major form of impairment, you know, your brain knows how to do it. So it streamlines everything for you. So as you develop positive habits, it gets easier and easier and easier the more that you do it, and the more you're able to do because you've been doing it. So the more we do, the more we're able to do. That is the good news. That's why jugglers get good, why football players get good, why Michael Jordan got good, why Muhammad Ali got good, because the more that they invested in themselves, the more return they got. You know. So here's the thing: the brain wants you to survive, but it also wants you to thrive. It wants you to have a wonderful experience and thrive so that you enjoy having sex, so that you reproduce and keep the species going. You know, and we are that species, which all species seems to have. Even moths and ants and spiders run from danger. You know, there's this life thing in us that keeps us wanting to stay alive. So the thing is to stop allowing your life to be horrible and start allowing your life to be wonderful. If you consider it a problem, it's a problem. If you consider it a blessing, it's a blessing. That's why I say celebrate it all. Because if you celebrate it all, if you can laugh at it all, if you can enjoy it all, everything transforms, even if it doesn't, because you've transformed. With that, I'm going to have to go, but I'm willing to come back anytime.
I'd love to have you back. Tell us about the book. There's some gifts in the book just for buying it. The activator.
Yep. RexSykes.com/book. Go get the book. And when you get the book at that website, it'll tell you where to go to get the book. And then come back to the website with your receipt code. Put that in. I'll give you a $497 online training about mastery and about learning about some of the things that we talked about as a bonus, absolutely free for getting the book. And then there's other things like the attitude activator. Same website, just different. If you go to that website, RexSykes.com, you'll find the Attitude Activator. You'll find the Ultimate NLP Home Study Program, Mind Design, all some of my other programs, and a lot of different things you can use to transform your life. And I always encourage people to join me live or online if they really want to take control of their life, their thoughts, their heart, their speech, their behaviors to get the kind of results that they can get, but they might not know that they can get it. But if you want to skyrocket your results and move forward and live the kind of life that you deserve to live, come see me. I'll tell you, give it to you straight. If I can't help you, I'll tell you, go somewhere else. And hopefully I'll even be able to send you somewhere that would be useful.
You're awesome. I really appreciate your time and what you've shared with us today and in the book and in your work. It's really cool stuff. And you're a blessing. Thank you.
And you're a blessing. And if I had time, I would stay here with you. But I have another thing I have to do. We've got the LA Leadership Week. com, which is the 7 days of leadership. I don't know when this is going to be published, but May 1st through 7th, 2024. So it's going to date it. But go and register. It's top speakers and myself. I'm hosting and producing and all sorts of stuff. So you can go sign up. It's free, but you have to register if you want to get the replays. And since it's 7 days, and it might be longer by the time I'm done with this, 7 days of full days of speakers. So you want the replay so that you have that available.
I'll put all that stuff also with the video. I appreciate you. Go do your thing.
And we'll talk off this, but yes, thank you so much. I do have to go, and I love you, and thank you, Tim. And I'll see you when I'm in Los Angeles, I hope.
Yes, I hope so too.
Let's do that. Let's make it a point.
Thank you.